Just like that. Just like that. Just like that.
Hello and welcome to the Coach's Box for another week. We're going into the bye rounds in the AFL for, well, obviously not the first time, but it is the first time under this new system of three complete games being cut out every week for a three-week period. And the numbers are a little bit down on the live chat at fanfooty.com.au/video. This is the Coach's Box. My name is Monty, and the other person I have here is Molly. We're both Hawthorn supporters, so we are up and about this evening, Molly, are we not?
13! Yes, we are.
So, yes.
We are up and about.
Yes, now, I did not catch all of the match on the Saturday, but I think a lot of coaches have... I've got the feeling, watching a lot of games this year, I'm not sure I've said this on the show before, I've got a feeling what probably about, I don't know what the percentage would be, maybe 30 or 40% of the time I'm watching a football game where... They're not actually playing AFL football. They're not playing games to necessarily win. There's not a huge amount of go forward in a lot of these games, and they're actually just playing dream team. And I did feel that was happening a bit in that game. I'm personally, Molly, I'm all for this new development. I wish players had played dream team a bit more often, but obviously with the results going pear shaped for a lot of games where. You know, it was. I think the all nine games were top teams in the top nine playing teams in the bottom nine. Yet we had a huge amount of upsets. So that is, as they say, good for football.
It is indeed. Yeah, it's the first time ever that's happened that the top nine have played the top eight in the top nine in, played the bottom nine in one round.
Mm.
So it was good. A lot of close games. And as you say, a couple of good upsets.
Now, on to fantasy football related matters, Molly. I suppose just at the start, it is coming up to the bye rounds, and I do feel like there's a lot of angst and there's a lot of dissatisfaction in the user community this week. The reality of the byes is hitting, and I don't think a lot of people like it very much. Now, it may just be Pendlebury and Scotland and Waters owners who are crying about their premiums going out. Do you think it is a legitimate complaint that people are making at this point about the inflexibility of the system, the fact that it hasn't changed enough in some people's opinions to take into account the multiple buys that people are looking at, or is it just whinging by people who've had bad injury luck?
Oh, I think it's a bit of all of the above. I mean, it's the realization that if you hadn't set your team up right, you'd be looking at a lot of donuts this week. The realization that, you know, we all planned all these great structures around having this many of this round and this many of that round, and we were all just praying for no injuries, and that just hasn't happened. There's been, you know, injuries galore to the premiums in all areas, and rookies that look like they're coming on strong and then get dropped. I mean, I think there's one we're going to talk about today who's in that category. So, I mean, it's just been hard all around. I mean, about the only positive a lot of people have, especially those who have Giles and Cox or Giles and other of the round 11 ones, is that you could easily see, you know, both the two rookie ruckmen in Stevenson and Redden getting a game this week.
Yes, look, I mean, there are big luck elements to it. I mean, people who had Dixon and Hall a month ago would have been tearing their hair out thinking they're going to eat four extra donuts during the bye periods, and those two have come back and are playing, and there's obviously other examples of players who are missing, and Couch is still missing. For those who have still held on to him, I think there's a couple more in that boat who are missing at the moment, whose names I can't think of at the moment. Well, who am I thinking of? Players who were playing but aren't playing anymore. Can you think
Spur?
Of any? Spur. Well, Spur is another one. Yes, we'll talk about him later in the show. But yeah, so. There are examples. I mean, obviously, if people have got in Nathan Brown, I believe he's back. So that's one saving grace. But Yeah, there a lot of this is luck based, and due to the intransigence of virtual sports in not changing the rules to suit the new system. And it does look like, from my perspective, Molly, that I think that this system is going to be in place for the entirety of the current TV rights deal. So we're going to get another 4 years of this system from the looks of it. I can't see, despite the AFL Players Association making some noises about an extra buy or an all-star break or State of Origin break, I can't see any of those ideas getting up. So I think we're going to have to deal with these buys the way they are, aren't we?
I still think that the AFL are going to work hard to get that second buy. Whether the Cricket Victoria or the MCG or the government are going to blink enough for that to happen is going to be what's the interesting factor. That's going to be the one that we're going to have to work out whether that's going to happen or not. I couldn't comment on that one.
Now, I suppose just to round off this sort of meta discussion, do you think, for fantasy coaches who are getting a bit ticked off by this whole buy situation, some of them might be excused for paying less attention or, throwing their hands up and walking away from their dream team or their super coach squad. Is that necessarily a failing on their part, or is it a fault of the game if people do that? It's something that's always happened, because people do drop off in interest over the course of the year for various reasons. It may just be life things. They may go on holidays. I'm hearing a few people are doing, or they may move overseas for 3 months for work or whatever it might be. People do tend to lose interest over the course of the year, but I think the buys are going to add a little bit to it. Do you see this whole buy situation is actually, lessening interest in Dream Team in future years, given that, it does look like this is going to be here to stay?
Yeah, I think we all feel a bit helpless. With all the injuries we've already had and we haven't got as many trades as we would have hoped to, try and work some things out during these rounds and the injuries in there and the buys and just knowing that there's nothing you can do about it, it's really hard. I've put forward the idea that especially if they go to two buys of having a loan system where you loan a player for a week to replace a player who's got the buy, so loaning a player of equal or lesser value and getting around it that way, which I think would create tremendous interest during the buy rounds, and especially on sites like FanFooty and on podcasts like the Coach's Box, of people trying to work out who are the best guys to loan in that week.
Yeah, well, obviously, I think we talked about that last week. So yes, that's certainly one example. But I suppose there's two things I think about that. First of all, it may not be that idea, it may be some other idea. There are, a number of forums where people have taken it upon themselves this week to, throw up other concepts and other solutions, and it may be one of those. Maybe someone out of left field will come up with something that Peter Jankulowski at Virtual Sports likes. Maybe whatever it is, I think something that needs to change. That's my opinion. And it is, I suppose, a bit selfish, as you say. People do maintain interest in fantasy media and my business and your site as well. If they have if they're not as helpless as, of course, you say they are at the moment. So there's that. But I suppose the other thing, Molly, getting to the round review is it is almost too realistic because you look at a team like Carlton this week, for instance, and I feel for Brett Ratten and the Carlton Footy Club because, as a Hawthorn supporter, I went through this, and the all of the Hawthorn fans went through this, and Alistair Clarkson and the Hawthorn Football Club went through this in 2009 and 2010, where they just got smashed from pillar to post with injuries, and now Carlton is having its turn, and Essendon's had its just about every other team's had their turn. Of course, Collingwood's having its turn this year, and getting smashed by injuries is a football thing, and it happens to many, many teams every year. So I suppose it is realistic for fantasy teams to also be done, but I'm not necessarily sure it's all that much fun, Molly.
No, it isn't, and you're right, and that is a very realistic issue. But I mean, I think just, yeah, it's just, it's, I guess we've also been spoiled with the, you know, last year where, you know, we had those extra, extra players on the bench and we had the extra trades as well. And it really, and with the amount of rookies, good rookies around from the Gold Coast, it just was a recipe for huge scores, you know, every week and huge, you know, enormously good teams. So I think that sort of spoiled us a bit too. So it's a bit of coming back to reality of, you know, you have to plan well and you have to have a lot of luck.
Yep. Well, I mean, and that hasn't changed this year, of course, either. With I think the weekly winner got something well above 2,500 this week. So there's certainly high scores to be had if you obviously get on the board of some of those humongous scores and make, you know, like obviously those who made Buddy their captain this week. But anyway, we'll get on to the round review. And it does start with the St Kilda Richmond game on the Friday night. It was a bit of a cracker of a game to finish up with. I'm not sure it was all that great footy to start off with, but once Richmond got going, it was you know, a bit of a shootout. I suppose from the St Kilda perspective, Molly, the one question I've been sort of wrestling with in Supercoach, well, I think that this question is not so much a Supercoach one as a Dream Team one, which is, Lenny Hayes, is he a keeper? Because his numbers have been tailing off, but this is mostly in Dream Team, not Supercoach. He still is getting a premium on his scores every week in Supercoach. I don't believe he's got a knock. He might have started slowly in this one. Obviously, the Richmond midfield, I thought, you know, dominated the St Kilda one, especially for the inside ball for a lot of this game. And Hayes, you know, Hayes being quiet was a major part of this. And that is his lowest score in Dream Team for the year. Of a 72. He hadn't got anything less than 87 before that. Now, I'm looking at St Kilda's run after the bye. So they've got the Suns and the Crows leading into the bye. After the bye, I think it's about a middling sort of run. They've got, you know, a lot of poor teams and a lot of good teams, so I think that's a pretty even run. So, but I guess that the question, I think this question has already been answered for Supercoach players. He is a keeper there, but for Dream Team, the temptation would be you want to get someone who's averaging about 20 more than Hayes is doing, you know, in the last month or so. So Hayes for Dream Team, a keeper or not?
No, I think you would be looking at, especially if you have multiple round 13 midfielders, as him being the guy. You look to get a round 12 or round 11 midfielder in for him, with, you know, maybe some money from somewhere else. That would be the ideal move if you can make it.
Hmm. Well, I, as I said, I did only consider him as a Supercoach player this year. He has been decent in Dream Team, but, you know, I think the time has come where you might want to put a line through him in Dream Team.
Yep.
On the Richmond side, I suppose we have to go back yet again. This might be the last time we do this, Molly, because this is probably the last time you would have to make a decision on these two. Stephen Morris and Brandon Ellis. I think the question probably for Ellis has already been answered, and a lot of people have traded him out already. Possibly more pertinent for Morris, because he does look like a permanent addition to that that back line. And I am, you know, I suppose that the question is, you're coming into that round 12 bye, is it worth keeping Morris and eating that donut because you think Morris is, you know, going to be arguably the best B8 in the competition this year?
For me, I'm, it's an interesting one. I'm thinking that it's probably a decision between him and Bug. And I think Bug's probably got a higher ceiling. Mm. Morris may be a bit more consistent, but I think Bug's got the higher ceiling. So I think I'm personally looking at eating one of my, you know, two minimum buy-related donuts this week in my backs. I've held on to Mitch Golby, and he's sort of done okay enough to hang in there, and Lake as well. So...
I'll just read you out the last four scores for Bug and for Morris. Now, Bug at 68, 58, 44, 62. For Morris, it's 74, 40, 53, 66. Those, to me, look like pretty similar numbers. So I'm not sure it's all that much of a difference.
No, it isn't. But Bug has the higher scores earlier in the year, and Morris hasn't broken out to the very highest of the scores. So that's where I say I think his ceiling's a little bit higher, but their scores are going to both be, you know, things you want to keep on the bench once the bye rounds are out of the way. But handy to have if needed for all these injuries.
Mm. Look, I mean, Richmond being a round 13 bye, as far as I'm aware, that's right, isn't it? Yes, it is. Look, I mean, I can see myself looking at after round 12 and looking at Morris and Horsley and Hall in my forwards and thinking, why don't I just eat these three donuts and wait? Why am I you know, choosing now to upgrade all of them? I could certainly see a lot of people choosing to eat that donut deliberately and keeping Morris for because he's better than anything else that you could trade in, I suppose. So just to round that out, so for Ellis, the question probably has already been answered. I mean, but the people who still do have him, if you go Ellis v. Bug, is a no contest, it's definitely Bug?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I mean, Ellis has been a bit up and down, he's worn the vest, he could wear it again, so I think he's still a fair amount of risk involved with him.
And just to round out the Richmond discussion, Ben Griffiths on the bubble this week, he's played the last two games. He has not worn the subs vest, as far as I'm aware, but he has played very deep back on the second tall forward, Ruffhead and Kajiski, in the two games that he has played. So his price is, as a lot of the rookies on the bubble this week, his price is sort of 150 or thereabouts, rather than the 100 that you'd want it to be. In Dream Team, he's even more in Supercoach, 211. So, safely ignored. I believe they still have a couple of players to come back in that back line, don't they? So his JS is questionable, and his scoring is not very good.
Yeah, no, I'd avoid. And I mean, just the addition that he's coming on the bubble in round 11 just doesn't make sense, because you're going to have to either trade him out or wear a donut from him in the coming weeks.
Mm. Well, of course, it's Grimes coming back. That might be the reason. That might be the main reason why his job security is questionable. All right, on to the Geelong and Western Sydney game, Molly. That is how you put the sword to a expansion team in terms of fantasy performers. Steve Johnson and Paul Chapman at the top of the pops there. That, you know, you can always rely on those two to make hay while the sun is shining, or the sun is behind the clouds, of course, down as it was for all the day there, down there in Geelong. As far as fantasy, I mean, we talked about those guys a couple of weeks ago, Molly, so we won't go back to that particular well, but I feel like we need to go back to the rookies who are almost at the point where you would upgrade or downgrade them. Billy Smits and Cameron Guthrie, they have both been underwhelming as fantasy rookies. Smits, because of his propensity for the vest, and his job security has been pretty poor. He's put in some decent numbers. He's had 277s, but he's interspersed those with two sub-20s. So he's only gained 82 in Dream Team and 59 in Supercoach with three games missed. So for Guthrie, he's been even more poor. He has played every single game, but he's also had a propensity to get the vest and of a green or a red variety, and he's barely scraped into double figures in terms of gaining cash. Obviously, he was about 150 in Dream Team and 170 odd in Supercoach to start with. So no, neither of these guys have been very good, Molly, but if you're still hanging on to them in the vain hope that they're going to do something for you, is it safe to get rid of them now? Or, I mean, I suppose with Smets, there's obviously more upside there, but you just can't... And I suppose we have to mention, of course, Corey Enright has continuing problems with his foot. So do you think their job security, given the problems with injury that Enright has, is gone up? Or I think we asked this very same question about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Has anything changed there?
No, not a lot. I think Wojcicki's coming back, but that shouldn't matter too much, I wouldn't have thought. So, you know, I would hang on to him for one more week, and then if it's possible, get rid of him at the bye round.
Mm. That's a good point about Wojcicki, though. I think Wojcicki would hurt Guthrie more. I think it's Enright versus Smets in terms of, and it's Guthrie. I mean, I think Guthrie would probably have a rest, and they'd probably put Wojo in, so that's probably a good call there.
Yep.
All right, and on the Western Sydney side, of course, you know, as I mean, a lot of these teams are going into the bye for next week, so there's not necessarily anything we're going to be doing about them now. But, of course, we saw the debut of Nick Haynes. Now, of course, he's not on the bubble. He still only played his first game on the weekend. He is one of those ones who is a high draft pick, so he does have a price premium on his price, 152 in Dream Team and 166 in Supercoach. So if you're going down, you're going to throw away another 50 or 60 grand over getting the absolute bargain basement player. But we know that Haynes is I believe he's a top five draft pick, and he is quality. But I mean, having a look at his game on the weekend, Molly, he is a tall forward, and tall forwards in expansion sides over the last year and a half have traditionally not gone very well. So I mean, if you're looking for someone to downgrade, you know, a round 12 buy player to, after presumably Haynes does come on, you know, come off the well, of course he's not going to play, he's not going to be on the bubble next week when you would trade for him. So you might even be able to wait until after round 13. But so I suppose those who would want to get him in to play after his round 11 buy would have to get him in next week. So you know, the bubble issue is not as relevant. So just based on that one game, Molly, he's obviously quality, but I'm not sure he's a natural DT-er.
Nah, and job security could be interesting with, you know, they're getting an array of tall forwards options around with Cameron and Izzy and you know, Sheed's already marking that Jonathan Patton, the number one pick, tall forward, will be in the side for round 12, so you'd think the job security for him would be pretty tricky.
Yep, I absolutely agree with that, and of course, the fact that they have been using Giles as a resting forward, which has actually been working fairly well, and they've been using Phillips as the second ruck, and he's been doing not a great job, but I mean he is that Lee Brown type who you'll only get, you know, 5 to 10 disposals out of him, but that is a legitimate position even now within the sub era. So I think for structural reasons, if they have to choose between Haynes and Phillips, they might go with Phillips, but I mean, they have to get games in him at some point, Molly. He's going to, I mean, he's a top five, I believe he's a top five draft pick, or he's thereabouts, and they're going to have to play him at some point. So, I don't know, maybe they drop Izzy, or, I don't know, play Izzy in the back line, or they have to get games into some of these blokes at some point.
Yeah, maybe it's drop Phillips and ruck Izzy, so that's another
true.
Option. So.
That's true. Yep. Well, look. Maybe they'll even put Cameron into the ruck. I mean, put him on the ball, and he'd actually probably do some pretty good things. I don't know whether his body is ready for it. Which probably not. But yeah, that is a bit of an issue. I think about how to get Haynes enough games to fuel his development. But yes, it's a bit of it's definitely a fantasy relevant issue that there's a significant worry about. All right, on to the Hawthorn North Melbourne game, Molly. Now. You didn't put the big C on Buddy, did you, for that game, did you?
I would have liked to have. I've thought about it, but I didn't have the guts. I put it on Stevie J.
Hmm. Now, the question comes, obviously, in the wake of that 204, which is a record in the Dream Team era, at least the current incarnation of Dream Team. Of course, it was started in the Age back in the 90s, but was it the 90s? It was the 90s. And but the current incarnation of Dream Team has been going since 2001. So in that time, Lance Franklin is the only player to have busted through the 200-point barrier in Dream Team. Of course, you know, as all footy fans would know, the record is actually held in terms of stats going back to about the 1970s. By Jason Dunstall in that game, he kicked 17 goals, 5 against Richmond in 90... Help me here. Help me out here, Molly. What year was it? 92?
92, I think it was.
I was there. I was there on the Ford Pocket at the scoreboard end. Well, actually, they were both scoreboard ends, aren't they? At the northern end. It was a great day, that one. Anyway...
Around 792.
Indeed. So, yes. Now, the question, of course, in the wake of that is, how captainable is Buddy in the future? I mean, it was, is that a one-off? Or, well, obviously it's a one-off that he got 13, but... How much of a prospect is he as a captain in the wake of that for the rest of the year?
I think he's a bit too up and down to put the C on him too often. I mean, you could take a risk on it every now and again, especially during these bye rounds and with the injuries if you're struggling to come up with one, but...
How about against the expansion sides? He's got the Giants in round 15, and he's got the Suns in round 21. Would you put the C on in there?
Yeah, I would consider it. Although the Giants have Phil Davis, and he did a reasonable job. And I mean, I don't think the Suns will have Bock back, who definitely does a good job on him. So I guess perhaps that is an option, assuming that the club doesn't rest him those weeks. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's some legitimacy in that.
Just looking at some other... I mean, look,
It's a bit risky, though.
I'm just looking at some other clubs who you might want to put the C on him for. Obviously, this week at over at Port, Carlisle's not you know, he's no chop liver. Against the Lions, they'd put probably Patful... actually, they'll probably put Maguire on him, especially if he's going to play deep forward. Yeah, I mean, people can take Maguire apart. He is beatable. Henderson's...
So, you wouldn't think they'd put Merritt back for that game?
No, I don't think so. No, they seem to want the source forward at the moment. Look, it's going to be really interesting to see how much he scores against Lake, I presume, or maybe it'll be Austin against the Dogs in round 16. Not sure who's going to be fit for round 17 against the Pies. Probably Tarrant, maybe, at that stage. He has scored 9 against Essendon before, even with Fletcher and Pears in the side. So that's going to be an interesting one. Port again. So, yeah, look, I think he is captainable against the Suns if he plays, because with no Bock down there, they're playing kids like Thompson and Tape, you know, kids who would get monstered like Scott D. Thompson and, of course, Luke Delaney did in that game on the weekend. So, yes, it is a fraught one, but I'm sure there are going to be opportunities where you're going to be able to look at him and think he is actually captaincy material.
Yes, to quote from Parenthood, if you like the roller coaster, he would be an absolutely beautiful captain option if you like roller coasters.
Yes. All right, just to round off the Hawthorn the Hawk Talk, Molly, Bradley Hill... I believe he has got the sub vest in both of the games so far. So, again, he's on the bubble, so I'm just mentioning him because he's on the bubble. And, of course, he was on... I've got him down as coming on for Hill, so that's not right. He's coming on for someone else. But
Gibson.
Yeah, so it was... Yeah, but I think in the first... It was for Gibson. I should change that. But, so he sort of joined the party there in the last quarter with all the heat taken out of the game. But I can't see him being at all fantasy relevant going into the second half of the season, Molly, can you?
No, unless you needed someone for the next 2 weeks.
They seem to like, maybe, at the moment, Popolo and Bruce and Savage as their small forward. Savage is the one that they've moved back there. So I can't necessarily see them putting Hill in there permanently. They seem to want Savage's defensive pressure, so I don't think that's something that Hill necessarily brings.
Yeah, he's playing on the wing. He's too small at the moment. He just doesn't look like he's able to go in hard enough. He looks like he'd snap in half if he got into too many packs at the moment. So, I mean, it was sort of a good chance to get him in for a quarter and a bit this week. So, yeah, I think he looks a prospect, but, yeah, he just needs another year in the gym, I think.
All right, and on the other side, I got a bit of blowback for another player on the bubble this week. I gave Aaron Black the pumpkin, which in retrospect I do admit was a bit unfair. You know, he's... He did kick some important goals last week, but, I mean, you look at his numbers, 51 last week in that win against the Lions, and only 41 this week. A bit of it, I think, came fairly late. But, again, not a player who I think is going to be fantasy relevant. So he does have the bye this week, so he will be on the bubble next week, you know, after round 11 if you're downgrading. But I can't see the ball getting into that forward line enough, A, and B, it coming in with enough quality to make, you know, ideally you'd like Black to be the next Tory Dixon, but I can't see Black getting to those heights, Molly. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I liked his game against the Lions, what I saw of it, and he looked really nice, but yeah, I just think they've got a lot of problems at the moment, and so that won't help him out in the next few weeks. So yeah, I think not enough money options. He's got a high premium, too risky for what he's been putting out.
Mm. All right, on the Fremantle Adelaide game now, perhaps you can tell me, Molly, why is Ross Lyon playing Jesse Crichton over Lee Spur? Crichton is spuddly. He looks terrible. Now, his numbers in that game ended up being decent, but because he got on the end of a fair few halfback rebounds. But defensively, he is just shocking. He is just I could probably count, you know, on the replay at least three or four goals each of those 2 weeks that he's played that are directly attributable to him or his committing a clanger or not being close enough to his opponent to prevent them scoring the goal. I just can't see what Crichton gives to that team right now that Spur is not going to give once he comes back. So, I mean, they've got the Tigers at home this week. I'm not sure there's going to be a huge amount of halfback scoring in that game. And who was it this week? I believe it was... It might have actually been Jared Healy who mentioned on the call in the Fremantle game this year that what he thought that the Dockers needed was more halfback runners. Jared, mate, the Dockers are full of halfback flankers. I mean, there's just too many of them. Anyway, so look, this is an old sore of mine. But so Crichton is on the bubble this week. If I was down there at the hierarchy down there at Fremantle, I'm not sure I'd give him another game until he showed some better form in the waffle. And surely Spur is shown enough to get a game back in. Just get him back in there, Molly. Get Spur back in there, please. Can we send a message to Ross Lyon? What is Crichton offering there that Spur is not?
Well, I'm sure if Ross was here, he'd say, minnows like you should not be listened to. And yes. He has his reasons for playing Crichton over Spur. Spur needs to do the right things. But yeah, no, I mean, they've definitely got a lot of runners off the half back line, and he didn't seem to do a very good defensive job at all. So, you know, he must have some reason for playing him that we don't see, and some reason for not playing Spur. I mean, Spur put in some good performances, but not good enough, obviously.
In the words of another very famous Crichton, Molly, Mr. Lyon, you are a smeghead. I just like to.
No, he would have said Smig.
See, I was going to go there, but I thought no one would get that joke. But obviously, I was preaching to the converted on that one. All right, on the Adelaide side, just to round out the look, we should have been talking about a lot of rookies this week because there are a fair amount of options on the bubble this week, and one of the better ones in terms of pure numbers is Sam Shaw. Of the Crow. You're not going to play that for me, are you, Molly? Anyway. Right. No. I thought I could hear you YouTube in the background.
No.
All right. So, yeah, Sam Shaw played his second game this week. Of course, he played once in round four, played again this week. So this was a bit of a different look because they had Rutten and Talia and Shaw all in the same side, so which is a bit of a... a different look for me. I'm not sure that they can do that in every game. I suppose they were probably looking to combat the Fremantle talls. You know, they were expecting obviously Pavlich and Clark, and of course they wanted to make sure they had enough tall timber down there to take on Sandilands when he rested forward. And I guess that's a legitimate tactic. And of course they played Anthony, who was basically a corpse on legs. But I suppose, you know...
Come on, he'll have his Twitter account on you.
Indeed. So, Sam Shaw, job security, a big issue. Scoring in that game was pretty good, but I'm just not sure there's... if you look at the Boys on the Bubble feature on Fan Footy, he has a break-even of minus 66, and he's now averaging just on 70 in Dream Team. And he's just at the right price, but... it is going to be tempting to go from a Morris down to a Shaw because you're going to make a whole lot of money, but, I mean, you're sacrificing a lot in doing that, of job security and scoring potential, I think.
Yeah, you'd love him to... You'd love it to only be one buy round that he was going to have to endure, so, you know, that you could see he was going to play one the week of his bubble and then be over the buy rounds, because even then, if he did... not play, you'd at least have him on the bench. But yeah, it's a bit of a risk. But I mean, the problem is there's not a lot of great options around. I mean, it's going to be a really tough thing to get good players in that are going to play those positions during the bye round. So, you know, you're probably going to want to hold off and not trade out one of those rookies for, you know, in round 12 to do it. Or if you are, you're going to want someone who's got better job security in those rookie spots.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, if there was an injury to, say, a Taylor or a Rutten, I'd be all over Shaw, but I just can't justify doing it at this stage. I mean, it's going to be difficult to figure out who to trade for. The only possibility would be that if you have both Morris and Bug, and you're able to, fashion a trade. Maybe you've got Scotland and you're doing a double trade, or I don't know what the circumstances might be. But if Shaw can be somehow be your B9, that might be moderately acceptable. But in any other circumstances, and of course you got Daly on the is your other option if you don't if you want to pay a little bit extra. So
I think a lot of teams would be able to fashion him into the D9 position, but it's just a matter of are you willing to risk that that the second week, you know, that he's going to be picked again if he is in fact picked in round 12.
It is a pretty stark choice between Daly and Shaw, and for an extra 40 grand or so, you're getting a lot better job security and a lot more assured your point scoring ability. So I think the Shaw versus Daly, I think that's a no contest. It's pretty much Daly, especially if you're downgrading Morris, I suppose. So now the Essendon versus Melbourne game. I was looking, of course, Scott Pendlebury is in my side, so which of course means guaranteed to get injured. So I was looking for another round 12 premium, Molly. Now, of course, I didn't have enough money to go up to Stanton, but you look down and the next round 12 premium that you see in the list there is Joe Watson, and I'm not sure we've actually talked about him a lot this year. Maybe we might have mentioned him once, but he is scoring 115, and has not missed a game. He's only had two sub-100 scores, and he's had, three 130-plus and 128 in that game in a losing side. So his standard deviation is pleasingly low. I think he probably would have made that consistency list that the Freako published this week, did he?
Yeah, he's in about 7, I think, if I'm reading that right.
So, look, I mean, he ticks all the boxes in terms of, pleasing everything that you'll want out of a fantasy premium midfielder. If you look at Watson versus Stanton, Stanton's obviously, you know, scoring about 12 more points in Dream Team. It's only 4 points in Supercoach. But in terms of price, you're paying 40 grand less for Watson in Dream Team. It's about the same in Supercoach. So I guess this is probably more of a Supercoach question. That 40 grand that you're paying less for Watson over Stanton, is that worth the money worth having not paying that premium to go up to Stanton and sort of settling for Watson? Because I mean you're still settling for a guy who's scoring 115, which is pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. I think apart from his injury concerns, that he's had a few nagging hammies and the likes over the last few years, I think he is someone who isn't going to be tagged as much with the rise of Stanton and how affected Stanton has been in the past with tags, because they do have a harder run in the second half of the season than they did in the first. So you'd expect them to come up against some sides that might cause them a few more bother. I mean, starting right up front here with Sydney in round 11. So, you know, I also have Penderbury, and I'm probably going to be more likely to sit on him for a week and ride him through the bye and hope he comes back. But if you are looking to trade him out, then yeah, I mean, with bye beware on the injury front, Watson is a pretty good option.
Just looking at his last five scores against Sydney, but dating back to 2007, 72, 93, 96, 96, 109, which is not all that great. So yeah, it may be worthwhile waiting until after his bye to get him in, I suppose. But yes, it's those Pendlebury owners. Well, we'll talk about him when we get to the Collingwood game, I suppose. Now, also in that game, we need to talk about Daniel Nicholson, because he is a mid-pricer, but his scoring has, of course, he is an upgraded rookie. He did play a fair bit last year, so he is about mid-price. He's 266 in Dream Team and 276 in Supercoach, but scoring mid-80s he's played the last two games, so of course he is on the bubble this week. Now, I think it's a bit silly to be getting him in just until the bye, but I mean, because of course the bye is only one game away. But I mean, if you're getting him in now, you're getting him in as a keeper. You're getting him in as a cut price keeper. But can you see any justification for getting him this week, or maybe since his break even is sort of in single digits, so he's probably going to be going up about sort of 30 or 40. Maybe getting him in after the bye, just allowing him to have that one price increase. But after his round 4 bye, he's got the GWS right in round 13, so you'd think he'd score okay in there. He's playing roles. He's playing, you know, sort of back pocket roles, but he's managing to score heavily despite playing in as a genuine backman. So I mean, he and Grimes have both been pretty good in that back line in the last couple of weeks. So Nicholson, I mean, There have been a couple of, you know, these mid-prices who sort of had flashes. I mean, you know, you would think of John McCarthy earlier in the season. He's been decent. So I'm not sure we can rely on Nicholson. I just feel like there's a letdown, I think, coming for Nicholson. I'm not sure he can keep up that mid-80s scoring, Molly.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a bit risky, and you know, not enough exposed form to say that He can carry a good run through the year. Although, you know, Melbourne have a decent second half of the season as well, as far as teams to play. List they have no well, after this week, though, you know, it's the last time they'll see Collingwood, Hawthorn, Geelong, or Essendon. I don't see Essendon in the second half of the year, so a pretty nice run. Two GWS, Lions, Port, Gold Coast and Fremantle in round 23. So, you know, he could have a good run, but yeah, I think it's just too risky for the price. If he was about another 50 to 70 lower, then he'd be well in the contention, especially being a back centre eligibility.
The thing that impresses me is that he's played against Garlett, you know, and scored a big 88 against Garlett, which is pretty good. You know, Carlton traditionally being a team which halfbacks do pretty poorly against, and you know, he was running around with Collier in that game, so it was going a bit he was getting dragged up the ground a bit in that Essendon game. But look, I think the only more dangerous opponent he could have had, of course, was the Eagles. So and he doesn't actually have the Eagles in, as you say, in the second half of the year. So he's passed, you know, both tests, which are pretty stiff tests in terms of scoring for a halfback. So, but I mean, again, you're going to have to get him in as a keeper now. So, I can tell you, Molly, I got in. We're not going to talk about him directly, but I got in Andrew McWalter in Supercoach this week. What a magnificent failure that was. After his two magnificent, lovely performances in the first, just coming up to the bubble, and he delivers a 40. Like, I could certainly see a 40 out of Nicholson this week. Now, the thing that would cement it, Nicholson getting a 40, is if I traded him in. But failing that, I don't think I am going to, so maybe he'll continue on. So, anyway.
I want to throw a Melbourne player at you as a bit of a roughy, like, if you're in trouble and need a cheaper guy who could score well from here on in his new role. What's in the back line with, you know, he's a pretty decent user of the ball, and that's probably been a criticism of them down back. Just wonder with their run home whether he's not worth a look in at his price.
But do you think he's going to play that same role all the way through the season? I mean, I have already heard talk, I think it was on the couch, they said, you know, he's going to have to go to a Ruffied or a Dawes or a Cloak or, you know, the commentary at least, I mean, of course we can take that with a grain of salt, they don't have the control of the reins down there, but the commentary seems to be putting pressure on Watts to actually start playing as a key back instead of a halfback flanker. So do you think that Neil will at some point actually do what the commentary want and actually play him as a key defender and thus, you know, pretty much destroy his scoring?
They may, but as I say, I think he's someone that I'll look to chip to and play out of on the way out. And they don't play that many big forwards coming up or two big forward sides. I mean, they play, you know, Brisbane with Jonathan Brown and Richmond with Riewoldt. But apart from Adelaide with Taylor and Tippett, there's not a lot of two really good tall forwards coming up against them. I mean, they've got the Giants twice and Gold Coast, as we were saying, and Brisbane and even Fremantle twice, where, you know, he might play on Zach Clark, but you'd think that he'd be able to try and run off Zach Clark and hurt him going the other way. I do not think that it's not a risk, but, you know, it could be a good risk to take.
Well, I mean,
just throwing it out there.
Yeah, you look at those Dream Team scores, and you see either side of Watts are Rivers and Grimes, both at the, you know, in high 90s. So that half back line, I mean, maybe that's the reason that Neil may have rediscovered the fact that Melbourne do well when they're allowed to, when their half backs are allowed to rebound, because that's pretty much the only game plan that actually works at Melbourne is when they play that halfback rebounding style. Now, that halfback rebounding style is actually pretty easy to combat, and for whatever reason, the small forwards didn't work hard enough. I guess Jetta was too busy diving to put real pressure on those, you know, the likes of Rivers, Watson, Grimes. But that's something which I think is pretty easy to shut down by a good team. But as you say, Melbourne aren't necessarily coming up against teams who are capable or have the cattle to actually make that tactic stick. So, yeah, it'll be a risk. But Melbourne have put up surprise fantasy premium backs before. I only have to look at who was that? Not Warnock. Was it Warnock? No,
Garland.
I was thinking about four or five years ago. It's not Whelan. It was it's another one starting with W. Who was it? Who ended up being a top seven back?
Whelan.
Was it Whelan? Yeah, it was Whelan, wasn't it? Yeah. And he ended up being a top seven back, and no one ever picked him because they just didn't like the look of him, and he didn't look like a fantasy player, and he kept on getting hundreds every week. And so, yes, I mean, it's been happening for years that Melbourne halfbacks have been able to dominate in fantasy terms, but yes, it's a risk. It's a risk. I'll put it that. Now, speaking of players who I have not been rating all that highly, in the Port Adelaide and Carlton game, Molly, I've had a Port supporter tell me, because I've talked about Matthew Broadbent on this show, and probably these comments could also go for Daniel Pearce and Hamish Hartlett, that I feel like it's easy to for the past 3 or 4 years, it has been easy to shut down the Port Adelaide game plan. Now, Port has won 3 games on the trot. Obviously, the North game, they came back from 6 or 7 goals down in the the last quarter to pip them at the post. And then, of course, they had one of the expansion. They had was it GWS last week or no, Gold Coast? It was. And this massive mauling of Carlton. But I feel like with broadband is sort of a symptomatic of the Port side, put the Port midfield as a group, in the sense that I don't think he has a huge amount of defensive of side of his game, but if he plays against a midfielder who doesn't treat him with a modicum of respect, he can actually hurt you going the other way. And this is also true of Pearce and also true of Hartland. Now, Pearce, after coming back from the Sandful, has for some reason been escaping the tags. I mean, Pearce played head-to-head with Simpson and smashed him all about the park in that game. Broadbent was, you know, he and Ebert just had a picnic on those wings. And Hartlett, obviously, you know, well, he got best on ground. But I feel like Broadbent is, I've been told, you know, well, look at Broadbent in the last couple of weeks. You know, he's finally, you know, stuck it up you and shown you, you know, the quality that he has. But I feel like, you know, this midfield is just waiting to come up against a midfield that is on song and does have a defensive side to its game, which the Carlton midfield currently does not. And the minute, you know, the week that they get a real midfield who is actually working, you know, as a team, they're going to get shut down like the Port Adelaide of old. So I feel like this three game run that they're on is a bit of a misnomer or a bit of a mirage, Molly. Do you get where I'm coming from here, or do you think that Harlett in particular and perhaps Broadbent have suddenly, you know, come out, or, you know, have had their breakout a period in the last 3 weeks?
Yeah, you'd think it's a bit of a risk, and I mean, the type of midfield that you describe, I mean, they're coming right up against it this week in Hawthorn, and then still have the Cats and Essendon and to a lesser degree, Freo, the Eagles and Richmond, you know, all teams who have midfields that will, you would think, trouble the Port midfield, as a Hawthorn fan, I hope, but that depends which midfield turns up, so... You know, I think there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. I mean, Carlton's a bit diminished in the midfield, especially on the defensive side. And Gold Coast, well, I mean, we saw what happened with them on the weekend, where, you know, their midfield's down and getting a lot of kicks, but not doing a lot the other way.
Mm. Look, I wasn't even making those comments in specific reference to the fact that they're playing Hawthorn this week, but... Well, I mean, I'm going to be fascinated to see how this, you know, this run of three games, you know, of the Porters won, how that actually comes up against a team that has actually got some form behind it, which of course the Hawks have after Saturday's game. So, yeah, I mean, look, Port has traditionally troubled Hawthorn in the last sort of 4 or 5 years. They've been able to shut down the Hawks zone. And be able to outspread them. So I'm not sure that's what's going to happen on the weekend, but we'll obviously have to see, and it'll be a fascinating duel, I'm sure. On the Carlton side, Molly, I guess we need to talk about Heath Scotland. Now, of course, his owners, I mean, his non-owners, I feel, have been swearing. I've been seeing a lot of swearing about Heath Scotland. You know, especially in the last quarter of games, because he is fairly cheap and he does get some touches which tend to infuriate his non-owners, because he thinks that they tend to think that their owners have, you know, suffered through three quarters of pretty ordinary football, and then Scotland suddenly comes out with a 50-point last quarter and makes everything better. But that's the way he plays. But anyway, so getting off that, I suppose, from a fantasy perspective, we need to talk about this old man calf injury. And whether it means that you do trade them out, because these calves can turn into longer term things than just 3 or 4 weeks. So I feel like there's two issues here. Do you trade them out first of all? And if you do trade them out, do you wait a week and eat a donut this week, and then so that you can? Like, I feel like, for instance, you can actually wait a week this week, eat that donut, and then not trade someone like a Morris or someone else who you might have in your round 13 backs later on. I feel like it's you're sideways trading a premium, but you'd probably have to do that anyway, and that is an excuse not to have to use another trade another trade later. So you're sort of, you know, doing two wrongs making a right, if you know what I mean. You are sideways trading a premium, but it is an injury related, and then you are using it through the buy period, but that's justified because it is injury related. So with Heath Scotland, do you believe this, you know, this talk of 3 or 4 weeks, or do you think it's going to last longer?
Well, I think 3 or 4 weeks is enough to make him someone you want to get out of the side anyway. So, you know, you have to think of it that if you're carrying him with a donut this week, that's an extra donut this week, and then you're going to trade him out next week, maybe to a round 11 guy who then doesn't have a donut. But I think assuming you planned to have as many round 13 guys as you did, then, you know, I would rather, you know, especially if you had the trade, I mean, I guess if you're like me and getting to the low end of the trade numbers, you may choose to not take the donuts now and trade him out, and you can still choose to trade out whoever you traded in for him in round 13 rather than Morris, rather than face an extra two donuts for that period.
Yep, well, that's certainly what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be eating the extra donut this week and waiting, and then probably going to a round 11 buy after that. That's probably my strategy.
Now, I want to throw you this, because I think this happened while you were out of the room in the chat this earlier. There was a conspiracy theory thrown at us, and it was that there's nothing wrong with his calf, and this is all related to the criminal matters against him.
No, I don't believe that. No, I think he's... No, look, he's an old man.
We all like a good conspiracy theory, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, just because Bigfooty's been down for like a day or two this week doesn't mean you need to use the coach's box chat to start rumours. So that's what Bigfooty's for. Anyway, we'll get on to the Brisbane West Coast game. That was a cracker to watch. Now, a couple of premiums we're going to talk about here, Molly. First of all, on the Brisbane side, Tom Rockliffe. We have had, we're not going to have any more evidence for whether we would trade him in. He's played the 10 games prior to the bye, and we have seen his good side is in his bad sides. He's had four scores of 125 or above, and he has had four scores of 80 or below. So he is the classic high standard deviation premium. He's still averaging about 100 in Dream Team and 110 in Supercoach. Is that enough? If you're looking for a cut price premium, he is it. In terms of a round 11 by midfielder, but is he scoring enough?
Yeah, this is the big question, really, is do you take that risk on him? I mean, he's coming off two bad weeks after a good week and two bad weeks before that and a good week. So
it almost summed up his year, because He showed in the midfield he could score well, and then he got put forward for a while and didn't score so well. So it was like a microcosm of the whole problem with him as a fantasy forward, a fantasy midfielder.
Yeah, it's so disappointing, really. I mean, it was long in my mind that I'd be trading him in round 12 as one of my sideways or upgrade trades, and it's just not looking good at the moment. But again, someone like me who's in a bad position already, it's like maybe it's okay to throw, you know, more good money after bad players, just for the knowing that, you know, if after the bye round they, you know, use that to change their style, find a new forward or whatever, he should come back. He could come back and play in the midfield and score the way you know he can.
I mean, you know, having said that, I traded in Scott Thompson a couple of weeks ago, and he's been very poor in the last couple of weeks. I thought that he would be he and Boyd, I thought, would be the two that you'd want as your round 11 fantasy midfielders, but especially with Thompson, of course, with Dangerfield attracting more of the tags now, because, of course, he's stepped his game up. But it turns out that Thompson is... I'll put the curse on Scott Thompson. So I apologise to all Scott Thompson owners. That was my fault. Yeah. My bad.
But I mean, just to follow that up, I mean, 449 for a guy who averaged, what did he average, 112 last year?
Yeah.
That's such a juicy price to think that, you know, if you can turn around that forward efforts or get rid of them, you know, he could be anything on the way home.
Well, it's just a matter of whether you think he's on the bottom of the roller coaster, or is he's going to basically be on the roller coaster for the rest of the year. So, I mean, you know, a drop of 105 in, we're talking about Rockley for you, drop of 105 in Dream Team and 74 in Supercoach, but maybe that's just where his numbers are at the moment. So, yes, it's a dilemma. On the West Coast side, Molly, now we need to ask the question. Bo Waters out for a month, for a week. With a charge, with a rough conduct charge, probably could have got more. I would have thought, especially given the charge against Jordan Lewis from the other game. But anyway, and of course the Darren Glass one that didn't go up, and the James Kelly one. Come on, he hit him in the head. Anyway, so look, it's just a complete joke that match review panel. I don't know how Mark Fraser, I don't know how Mark Fraser is able to get up on AFL.com.au in that show that every week and hold his head high and tell us all the stupid reasons why he made the stupid decisions he made, and then wow. B, why Matt Thompson is able to ask these stupid questions and doesn't ask the real ones. Like, you know, when you anyway, sorry.
The reason is the verdict is in.
Yes.
But how Leroy Jetted didn't go, it's just disgraceful.
Anyway, let's get back to fantasy football matters, Molly. Bo Waters out for a week. The temptation would be to trade him out, maybe if you're eating that donut in round 11. You're eating a donut this week due to this. I mean, Waters has scored, I think, 30 points per week more than what you paid for him. So you've basically made 300 points in terms of over your investment in him, so you're going to lose a third of those points this week. You would have thought, you know, a third to a quarter of those points this week. But I think the investment is still worthwhile, and you're just going to have to eat that donut, aren't you?
Yeah, unless you've got trades up your sleeve where you're planning on trading out a round 11 back this week anyway, you could do it. Especially if you're then going to have to trade out a round 13 or round 13 back anyway. You know, trade in around 13 back this week, take his score this week and next week, and then trade him out the week after. And if you have that many trades where you can do that, bring back in Waters, maybe make some money on that deal, you know, it could help. I mean, and you may be able to get some extra points. But if you don't have those trades, then you absolutely sit on him. He's gold. And, I mean, apart from injury or being rested in the second half of the year, you know, he's going to score well for you. I mean, he's a guy who a lot of people would have had in their plans to be a sideways trade for those round 12 and round 13 guys before he got suspended.
I can certainly see a lot of coaches trading him in after round 12, after, of course, he's had that week off. So, I mean, look, he's scoring well in the top seven in terms of back, so I can't see him dropping out of there. I mean, he might miss the odd game here or there, but at least that's the beauty of suspensions, is that you don't lose any points from them. It's much better than injury. So, I mean, if that's the worst he's going to do, then it's not bad.
And I mean, with his injury concerns, having 2 weeks off is going to freshen him up. So.
Yes, well, Jordan Lewis is going to have a whole month off. Wouldn't that be lovely for him? He'd be able to go away to I don't know, where does Jordan Lewis go? Warrnambool, indeed, yes. Go down and see the jumps. All right, on the Sydney and Bulldogs game, Molly. Now, I'm not sure a huge amount of fantasy coaches have him, but Lewis Jetta ended up being a very nice little cash cow, or at least mid-price improver. So he started the year at about 220 odd, and he has gained 220 odd in both. No, in Dream Team and in Supercoach, he was about 230 or 240. Now he's gained about 150 to 160 in both competitions. But he is about at the top of the roller coaster, because I looked at the roller coaster on Fan Footy on the front page. You go to the Fan Tools section and you see the roller coaster there, which is a page that shows you players whose break even is about where their average is, which of course means that their price is about to start stabilising. Now, Jetta to me is a sort of player who is a Stephen Hill type, and like Stephen Hill, he is getting tagged every week now. And now he had a fairly poor first half in this game against the Bulldogs, but he racked up in junk time. I believe he kicked all three of his goals in the second half. It was all four of his goals in the second half, junk time. Now, I'm not sure you can rely on that every week, so if you have Jetta, I think it is worthwhile to sideways trade him for, you know, for a real premium, you know, quote unquote, given that he is a centre. So, I mean, he is averaging 81, which is not really going to cut it in the second half of the season. So, I think after that game this week against the Dons, I think it's safe to trade him in, trade him out for a round 11 premium, I think, Molly.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can't add much to that. I mean, that's exactly right. That's what you'd be looking to do. He's done a nice job for you, scored a lot of points, got a lot of money, and say thanks very much and move him on.
All right. Yes. Well. Yes. Very well done, DeLustre. He's so not a natural fantasy player in terms of you know, having that sort of game that I'm wondering whether we'll ever be able to find a player like that in future years, because people, I mean, Hill was good in his rookie year, but I don't think we'd ever pick a Hill or a Jetta type as a fantasy player in future. So that'll be interesting to see if we can find another one like that in future years. But because those outside runners are becoming more and more important, given the how congested everything is. So I mean, you only have to look at the Hawks on the weekend with you know, how important that Smith and Young are to that side, and you can probably go through a bunch of others. I mean, obviously, how important Stanton is to Essendon, and, you know, it will possibly not this year, but Reece Shaw used to be that player for Sydney. So you go through every game and look at those players. So, all right, on the Bulldogs side of that game, Molly, we need to talk about Daniel Pearce. He is on the bubble. But, you know, he didn't reach double figures in either competition because, of course, he came on fairly late. So I suppose the he's another one who we can probably bypass. I mean, again, this is a team who is not going to be playing next week, and I think we've sort of exhausted ourselves on every other player in this side. So, I mean, apart from Pearce, who else can we talk about? Can we talk about Dixon, about whether he's a keeper? I suppose that might be another topic of conversation to give us actually something interesting to talk about. So Dixon, he has come back and played four games prior to the bye, 105, 72, 70 and 58, so his numbers are going down. But I feel like Dixon is trade-out material in the second half. But, of course, being round 11, you're not going to trade him out. So do you think Dixon can cut it as an F8, or do you think he's not going to be even emergency material in the second half of the year?
No, he could be a nice F8 or F9 if you can sort of wing that. But also, he's made a decent amount of money, $152,000. So cashing him in the next few weeks could be handy as well. So, you know, either way, it's a good move.
All right, now, of course, we'll get on. Excuse me, kind of the Collingwood Gold Coast game, Molly. My voice is almost giving out. This is the last game of the round, so I'll give you the starter's gun. Give me a minute or two on your take on the one of the issues of the week, which is, of course, people were screaming in the fan footy chat almost as soon as I put it up there. I put up the star on Dale Thomas. I think it was at three-quarter time. And people were immediately on my back about it because they thought, how can Gary Ablett Jr. not be getting the star? Not, for the star icon, of course, being signifying the best on ground player, as I judge. How can Gary Ablett not get the star when he gets 50 plus possessions? Now, it turned out, and people were saying, you know, look at his Supercoach numbers. He's still, you know, higher than Thomas. Although it did end up that just after the last stat adjustment that Ablett got downgraded past Thomas and also Wood to a third billing in Supercoach numbers, but that was only after the siren happened. But give me your take on this Thomas versus Ablett for best on ground in that game.
Well, I mean, I think it's a tough one. Ablett got given a lot of his possession. I didn't see this game, so I'm not sure how hard that... how hard he had to work for the possessions, but he got 32, so he's only 21 less. And I mean, I think Abler got a few cheapies, you know, handballs here and there and back again. And
I think the analysis has included the fact that Abler got about 2/3 of his positions in the back half, and mostly across halfback. So that is also an issue.
Yeah, and Thomas kicked 3 goals on him. So, you know, Ablett's let 3 goals go against his opponent.
It was important enough that I believe the Supercoach people actually Champion Data actually put up an article about it. It was mostly about two issues about why Pendlebury's score went up in the second half, and of course why Joel Selwood's score was so high given the small amount of possessions. But I mean, it also did touch, I guess, on that in the sense that they mentioned that Ablett had 10 clangers, whereas I think, you know, they mentioned that Selwood might have only had 2 clangers. So that is possibly the reason for the discrepancy between Ablett's Supercoach and his Dream Team. But I guess that the thing that the argument that I've heard that probably resonates most, you know, for in the pro Ablett camp was that is it Ablett's fault that he hasn't got anything to kick to in the forward line, whereas Thomas actually does have a working team around him? Am I penalising Ablett too much for the rest of his team being poor?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is the discussion of the week. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, he did okay. He got some hard ball, but, you know, you wonder whether he couldn't be moved forward more or, you know, at least put some defensive pressure on Thomas to show his teammates that, you know, sometimes it's not all about getting the ball. You have to stop your opponent a bit as well. So,
all right, well, let's get back to roundabouts. Let's get this back to a fantasy perspective. Dale Thomas, he is just he is arguably the most informed midfielder of the in the competition because he's beaten in 2 weeks. Again, you know, it is obviously a fraught term, beaten, when you're talking about beating a guy who got 53 touches. But in the last 2 weeks, he's beaten Patrick Dangerfield, who prior to that had torn apart Chris Judd and the entire, you know, Carlton team. And this week, of course, you know, he arguably beat Gary Ablett Jr. So those are the two arguably best / in most informed midfielders, and he's taken both of them to the cleaners and helped his team win both of those games against their opponents. So from a fantasy perspective, Molly, Dale Thomas had always had the knock on him that he wasn't consistent enough, and that is something that he got out of his game in the last couple of years. To the extent that he, you know, broke the ton in both competitions last year. He's not quite at that level this year with his average, because he obviously started off reasonably poorly in rounds one through three, and then of course missed a month with an injury. Sub 70s in round 8 in his comeback game against the Cats, but big numbers in the last 2 weeks. So, I mean, we've seen Beams and Sidebottom lift their numbers considerably in the absence of Luke Ball. So, do you think Dale Thomas also has, you know, a ballless lift, if you get my drift on that one? So, do you think that Thomas's numbers are going to have that 10 to 15 point lift that has also happened to those other two mids?
Yeah, well, I think he will have a bit of a lift, absolutely, and could be in a great spot at the bottom of the roller coaster or just on the way up on the roller coaster now, with those poorer scores in the earlier rounds. You know, he's, as you say, he's back from injury. Pendlebury won't be there for a few weeks, so, you know, it might give him an opportunity as well to make some hay and get moving up the ladder, and you know, he's done it against a good side, he's done it against a bad side, so I think there's some merit in looking at him at least as an underpriced premium.
I mean, I guess a lot of people, if they're looking for an underpriced premium from Collingwood, they're looking at Cloke. And you're, I mean, I think you did you get him in this week or?
I did bring him in, yes.
So, are you happy with the 100 and... What did he get in that game? 100
I was hoping.
112. I've been a long-suffering Cloak owner, and I was hoping for a lot more than 112. Come on, Cloakie. I mean, yeah. he disappeared in the second half again.
Yeah, I was hoping for him to break even, and I was riding him and Horsley against Ablett in the Eliminator to stay in it, and let's just say I'm out of the Eliminator.
Mm. All right. Now, to round out the Collingwood discussion, the Pie talk is a lot longer than the Hawk talk this week. We need to talk about the three Pie rookies who are on the bubble this week, Marley Williams, Tom Young, and Jamie Elliott. Jamie Elliott busted through the three-figure barrier this week, but a lot of that was champagne football, and I'm not sure they're going to be playing Gold Coast every week. In fact, I look at the schedule, and I don't think they're going to be playing Gold Coast every week. So perhaps we can take those numbers with a big grain of salt. But all three of those guys, I mean, they're smashed with injuries down there at the Pies, but job security for all three of those guys, possibly with Elliott, might be a little better. I'm not sure whether we've got a huge amount of faith in any of these guys. Obviously, with Swan to come back in, but of course, Pendlebury to go back out. They keep on getting injuries. I'm not sure we can rely on any of these guys to be, fantasy relevant. Maybe we can wait another week on them. Maybe we can wait for them to get one price increase and then bring them in after their round 12 bye. Are you considering any of these three guys, Molly?
No, I haven't liked their job security, and the guys I'm looking at now I'm going to have for the rest of the season, so I hadn't really considered any of them at present. Not at this point.
The only one I'll be looking at maybe would be Elliott. Now, he's got a break-even of minus 44 and minus 48. He is absolute cut price, and he's a forward. So I could possibly see going Dixon to Elliott, because I'm not sure Dixon is going to be all that startable anyway. So that's one possibility. But again, he could very well disappear into nothingness in the second half of the year. So I could see some people pulling the trigger on that, Dixon down to Elliott, after around 12, so that's a possibility, but was it Dixon? Is it not Dixon I'm thinking of? It might be one of the... No, either the round 12 one. Who am I thinking of? The round 12 forward who we've all got. The only possible one would be Couch, but of course he's not playing, so...
Yeah.
Yes, well, anyway.
Yeah.
Sadly. Right. Well. Look, it might even be. I'm thinking of someone else. No. Because of course he's got a round 12 bye, so he'd actually be bringing him in after round 12 for someone like a Hall. Hall is who I'm thinking of. Sorry, my apologies.
Yes.
Yes. That is who I'm thinking of. Confusing my forward rookies. Right. And on finally on the Gold Coast side, Molly, to round out the round review. The fan footy chat in this game, it seems like for every game that Gold Coast play, there's at least, I would say, about 40 or 50 horse jokes. This is a worrying trend. But look, I think the reason why people are making all these horse jokes about Kyle Horsley is that he is getting a bit, to the stage where all you can do is really, poke fun at him, because his numbers are not commanding respect. People are losing respect for Kyle Horsley, Molly. This is not very good. They're starting to poke fun at him. It's basically if he started wearing lycra like black caviar, they'd point and laugh. And which of course they're not doing with black caviar, because black caviar commands respect from his accomplishments on field. But with Horsley, they're just not giving him the kudos he deserves. So. Two scores in the last couple of weeks, 52 and 38, has looked like he has hit the wall. And I did give him the wall icon in that game, in even the first half, and eventually gave it back to him.
You didn't give him the mayor?
No, I didn't give him the mayor, no. Thank you very much. That's very nice, Molly. Yes.
Sorry for the horsing around.
Yes, thank you. No, well, don't you start. so, yes, now, of course, we do have to wait another couple of weeks until Horsley reaches the Gold Coast bye. I suppose, A, how startable is he? I suppose the answer is not very until that time. But, of course, you have to start him, don't you? So it's a bit of a dilemma. I mean, we're just going to have to eat these low scores in the next couple of weeks if he does, put in a couple more. And we're just going to have to, eat it, because that's the structure we've gone into the byes with.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit harsh. The guy scores, you know, nearly 400s in a row, and he has a couple of bad weeks, and the club has a couple of bad weeks, and everyone's jumping off him. I think you just have to ride it out for now, and hope he can turn it around, and you know, the way these expansion clubs work, I mean, there's every possibility that he'll turn it around the next couple of weeks. You know, with St Kilda and North, I mean, there's every possibility that he'll turn around. I mean, he put up 101 in his first game against North, so, you know, maybe it'll be a happy hunting ground for him to come back up against them.
Yeah, I mean, so you're talking about riding him out and a happy hunting ground, like hunting a fox or something. It's unavoidable to come up with these horse jokes. You know?
I didn't even mean that.
You didn't even mean, yeah. It's just like, they just come up, they just, look, it's just like water off a horse's back with these horses jokes. You just can't stop yourself. Alright, well, that concludes the round review. Before we get make too many more terrible jokes, I think that'll be about it, because my voice is giving out, Molly. We've gone to an hour 20 on this episode, so I think that's about enough for this week. We will, of course, be doing the podcast all the way through the bye weeks, with only 6 games each week to talk about, but I'm sure there's going to be plenty of fantasy topics to talk about, so rest assured we shall be doing a show all the way through the bye weeks.
Next week could be the donut show after, or the donuts is
yeah,
we probably all are going to face this week.
Indeed. Oop, well, my phone's going, so I possibly should stop. Anyway, well, as I said, that'll be it for this week for the Coach's Box, and we shall see you guys next week.
Okay, see everyone.